The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen. Ray is engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the program. It's Thursday, November the 14th, 2019. We're broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, and you're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have worldwide live listening. People can listen to this program anywhere in the world as long as they're right by a computer. Plug it in. My goodness, it's at buckmastershow.com. Podcasts available 24/7. We've got an extensive archive that goes back to the first week of January 2011 when we launched our radio project. So lots of programming there. The live line number 790-2040. Dr. Richard Carmona, former Surgeon General, who is now Chief of Health Innovation at the Resort Spa Canyon Ranch here in Tucson. Dr. Carmona was a Vice Admiral in the Public Health Service Commission Corps, served as the 17th Surgeon General of the United States. After 4 years as Surgeon General, Dr. Carmona returned to Tucson, where he is Vice Chair of the Canyon Ranch Resort and Spa Company. He is President of the nonprofit Canyon Ranch Institute. He is a distinguished professor at the Zuckerman College of Public Health at the University of Arizona. Dr. Carmona began his medical career as a United States Army Special Forces medic in 1967. He is a combat decorated Vietnam veteran. He has also had a very successful law enforcement career, and he's been connected to the Pima County Sheriff's Department since the mid-80s. In 2012, he tried his hand at politics, became the Democratic Party nominee here in Arizona for the United States Senate, losing to Republican challenger Congressman Jeff Flake. Always a pleasure to have you, Dr. Carmona, on the program. You travel 40 to 50% of the time you're on airplanes, so whenever we can get you in studio like this, it's a victory for the people of Tucson. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Let me share with you and our listeners a couple of sentences from this New York Times editorial this week about e-cigarettes. The nation is facing two distinct vaping-related health crisis, surging e-cigarette use among teenagers, and a lung injury outbreak that has sickened more than 2,000 people and killed at least 40. Both have exposed yawning gaps in the nation's public health apparatus. But instead of closing those gaps, the New York Times editorial writers say, the policymakers are turning to a much more straightforward fix, banning tobacco products. Dr. Carmona, here we go again. We turn to federal bans so often in this country, back to prohibition, and it goes on and on. Your thoughts, sir?
Sure. It's a very complex issue, and as you said earlier when we were discussing it, we have had a failure of policy here in the nation. The fact is that the e-cigarettes, it's a misnomer. They don't have tobacco in them. And this is not about banning tobacco. It is, for some, a method of what's called harm reduction. It's gotten out of hand because we don't have control of the supply chain. The deaths that have occurred appear to be from adulterated supply chain where either a vitamin E compound or other toxic substances within the CBD could cause this harm. But when we look at the issue of e-cigarettes, which again is a misnomer, to me it's simply a nicotine delivery device, much like we use nicotine for a patch when we want to get people off of tobacco or gum. And in the EU, for instance, they fund these programs and have tremendous results with them. But you have to keep them away from children. You have to have a secure supply chain, make sure it's not adulterated. And with that, they have been able to show as harm reduction it works. In our country, it's become a political battle. And because of that, we are suffering today.
Public health experts in Great Britain say at least part of the success, Dr. Carmona, is because of the way the products are regulated in the UK. The packaging, the advertising, it's tightly restricted. No bright, colorful labels or kid-friendly media campaigns are allowed.
All of that is important policy. I mean, clearly, this came up even years ago, but much less, though, when I was Surgeon General, and it's been trending ever since. We don't want children to have access to this. We don't want to entice them. But again, from a public health standpoint, and there is disagreement in the public health world as well, but there is a legitimate argument to be made for what we call pure harm reduction. Get people off tobacco, give them their nicotine fix with an e-cigarette, but they're not breathing in the carcinogens. They're not getting the disease-causing problems that you get from tobacco-related things. So again, I think the Brits have showed us it can be done if you secure the supply chain, ensure that it only gets to people who need them for harm reduction purposes.
We are not investing in public health in this country, Dr. Carmona. And I know for 4 years you advocated, you were out there, you were all over the place. You were talking about public health. I don't know, Surgeon General just fell off the radar screen, Dr. Carmona, after you left. I don't know what's going on. I rarely hear from the Trump administration Surgeon General. You wonder what's going on with public health in this country.
Well, the position of Surgeon General has been greatly minimized and marginalized, so most people don't even know who the Surgeon General is or if there is a Surgeon General. In fact, I get the question all the time, did they ever replace your position when you left?
Yeah.
And so your point is correct. And although we have great public health practitioners in our government, the NIH, CDC, there's 27 institutes at NIH, but it's fragmented. There's no single spokesperson for the issue of health anymore because there's so much fragmentation and, quite frankly, politicization of just about everything, divisiveness. We can't have an honest discussion about complex issues like e-cigarettes, CBD, or any other things that are trending today.
Are you concerned about the erosion of trust in not only elected officials, but public officials like people who speak out about public health? Are you concerned about that?
I'm concerned across the board at every level, because any time a public official violates their oath of office, breaches their fiduciary responsibility to the public, that is a challenge then for everybody who serves in public, because the public then doubts, who can they trust? We want a federal government, state government, and local government where they can be the final fair arbiters, where Republicans and Democrats and independents can sit down, have a discussion, and come up with a solution to a problem that's in the best interest of the public. We don't see that happening anymore. What we see is really tribalism. Each side, you know, going to their own corner, figuring out arguments to support their own thesis, and really forgetting that democracy is predicated on compromise, and no longer can we compromise. And that's hurting us. We see it playing out every day in the media. And, I'm worried about our democracy. I think we're going to be okay eventually, but this is a very painful time for us.
Well, here's a danger for you. What if we have a pandemic, a flu crisis worldwide, and it could happen, and we have health officials saying, you need to be vaccinated. We've had all this talk about vaccinations are harmful. There you go right there. There's an example of what could be awaiting Pandora's box.
Well, I mean, and a lot of this is driven by the so-called, fake media. This happened when I was Surgeon General. In fact, when I was Surgeon General, we had a challenge with maybe a smallpox, which was lost as Russia was broken up. And there were only two places in the world that had smallpox. It's one at CDC and one was the Russian government, and couldn't be found. There were some intelligence that someone with nefarious intentions may have had it and would weaponize it. So we talked about getting smallpox vaccinations to protect the public just in case. In fact, the president and I went on TV and got vaccinated to demonstrate that vaccines were safe. Yet we had media driven by celebrities talking about that this was a government conspiracy to sell more vaccinations, and so people went unvaccinated. Today, 35,000 to 40,000 people die every year of flu. And we still don't have our senior population adequately vaccinated, as well as children. And that presents a hole in our public health prevention within the country. And that's one of many problems, as you're pointing out, Bill.
Dr. Richard Carmona is with us. We will continue our conversation with Dr. Carmona, but first I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town. It's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, and they're going to be gearing up for Thanksgiving with all of your pies and roll requests. We'll be talking about that next week a lot as we get closer to the big day. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. They're open right now for lunch. They're located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Stephen is the chief baker and the owner. They do the breakfast beginning at 6:30 each morning. Go to monasdanishbakery.com for more information. We'll be right back with Dr. Carmona, 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Take 5 minutes to give us your input on regional transportation matters. The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee prepared draft guiding principles to consider as they prepare to develop the next RTA plan. The survey is available between mid-November and mid-December. To take the survey or to sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030, Tucson's trusted voice in Southern Arizona. For News Talk, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and it's my honor to have Dr. Richard Carmona, former Surgeon General, now Chief of Health Innovation at Resort Spa Canyon, Canyon Ranch here in Tucson. Dr. Carmona, we spent the first segment talking about e-cigarettes, certainly a very important trending health issue. There's another one that really should scare everybody, and it's about these drug-resistant infections. Nearly 35,000 people in the United States are dying each year from drug-resistant infections. There's a report from the United Nations saying that by the year 2050, the number of deaths from drug-resistant infections will surpass cancer deaths on the planet Earth. Hard to believe. That's how serious it is.
Well, those projections are certainly frightful. but this is not new. We've been challenged over many years with the over-prescribing, overuse of antibiotics, which for many people say, so what? Well, that's okay. It really isn't, because the more you use antibiotics and put them into our environment, the germs that we are trying to eradicate, they have immune systems too, so they develop resistance to the antibiotic. So then we need antibiotic 2.0, antibiotic 3.0, and we're way down the path now. Some of the original antibiotics we relied on when you and I were children don't work real well.
Penicillin.
You know, they'll work on some things, yeah. But less and less because the immune systems of these bacteria are functioning to survive. Mm-hmm. And in a Darwinian way, they don't want to die, okay, so they survive. The other thing is, the more we use antibiotics to put into our food chain, into poultry, into beef, that gets transmitted into the environment. Germs are associated, become resistant. So there's a number of pathways that lead us to this overall resistance that we have to deal with.
The avenues into the food chain you're
food
talking
chain.
About.
Yes, correct.
So when you're loading up cattle or whatever with these kinds
poultry.
Of... Poultry.
Yes.
So it gets into the food chain.
Yeah, it does.
There's a new one that the New York Times talks about, and it's called C. aureus. This is a really, really dangerous strain. Do you know anything about this one?
Yes. You know, there are a number of germs, if you will, mm-hmm. bacteria, that exist. And this one being cited, of course, is one. But there are many others that we see evolving over time, that they become resistant. This may be the one they're naming today, but there's others out there as well. This is just representative of a larger problem that we have to deal with. You hear the stories of flesh-eating bacteria we couldn't treat and so on. The fact is that it's a bug germ that is resistant to all the antibiotics we have. And in some cases, people succumb to that.
Let's go to Ingrid, who has called us now on the live line, and she has a good question, especially this time of year in the winter season about flu, and I think she wanted to talk about hand sanitizers, sure. And she did not want to go on the air, but that was her question. Are hand sanitizers, are they a good thing, or what about just good old soap and water and lathering up your hands? And I think I've seen some people say you do it long enough with hot water to the kind of like happy birthday song, then you know you've done it enough. Okay, hand sanitizers versus washing, lathering up.
I think they're both acceptable means of eradicating the transmission of infection. The challenge, of course, is if you are between restaurants catching a plane and you don't have time to go find a sink, if you have a hand sanitizer, that works well. So I think that it's not a good or bad thing. We should do everything we can to ensure that we are not transmitting infections to others, especially if you have a cold when you're at most risk. So you'd like to do that. But I think that we have to increase public awareness of how much we actually are the ones that are transmitting infections. And hand washing is just one way that we prevent that. Staying home when you have the flu and not infecting your workers or your schoolmates, okay? Washing your hands frequently, blowing your nose, and make sure you discard this appropriately. When you sneeze into your arm, okay, or into a handkerchief so it's not spreading germs every place else. There's a number of things we can do to help and suppress the spread of infection.
You're on an airplane a lot.
Yes.
What do you do to protect yourself when you're flying?
Well, there's a lot of things that I would do
protect
there.
Yourself from germs.
Yeah, well, when you sit down at your seat, one of the first things you do if you're going to use that tray, wipe it down. Wipe the tray down. Carry a little hand sanitizer, wipe it down. When you are moving about in the restroom, mm-hmm. where it's probably the most danger to you, use a wipe to open and close the door. Make sure that you wipe down the toilet seat, when you're going to use it.
Yes.
They're all little things, but in aggregate help to stop the spread of infection.
Good advice. Let's go back to the live line, 790-2040. Lauren has a question for Dr. Richard Carmona. Go ahead, Lauren.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll keep it brief. I kind of think, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think I know what Ingrid is alluding to. I've been worried about this myself. The hand sanitizer, what does it target? Bacteria, virus? Because that's a black and white situation between bacteria or virus. I understand we can, in the short term, stop transmission of pathogen, but what does my question is, what do this hand sanitizers target? Which organism?
Okay, good question.
Yeah. Well, they can target both, but when you get into the granular discussion of this, the microbiology, you know, antibiotics, sanitizers, they work different ways. Some of them stop the replication or the growth of a germ. Others will destroy the cell wall, and it will, and then that makes the whatever the pathogen is harmless. Often these things we call pathogens are normal bacteria that are in the environment, but become pathogenic for reasons because of overgrowth, because of the imbalance in our own bodies of what we call the microbiome. We have lots and lots of germs living in our body from our mouth right to the other end, to the anus, which normally help us with digestion, making vitamins and things like that. But when they become imbalanced, those particular germs can become pathogens and actually cause disease. So again, in general, the sanitizers will deal with both bacteria and viruses. But that's a granular discussion that is beyond the scope of this discussion, that you'd have to actually look and see what the mechanism of action is of the sanitizer or soap that you're using.
Dr. Carmona, I want to transition to your military career. You've had a great law enforcement career as well. We just had Veterans Day here recently. Some of your thoughts now about Vietnam and your experience there. How did that change and shape your life, Dr. Carmona?
Oh, it changed my life terrifically. I went into the Army as a 17-year-old high school dropout. Got a GED. My family was poor, and the military was my salvation, as it is for many young men and women who aren't sure what they're going to do. And I'm going through basic training, advanced training, becoming what they call a rifleman or an infantryman, going to parachute jump school, volunteering for special forces. You know, so that's a couple of years of training, but it taught me how to be a citizen. It taught me about duty and honor and country. It taught me about integrity. Talk to me about how to work with a team, how to build a team, how to focus on a mission, how to plan for a mission, and what the deliverables are and what the cost of those deliverables are. So it really matured me far beyond my young years. And combat, you know, seeing death and disability every day, losing your friends in combat, still painful to see my battle buddies' names on the wall. And since that time, I've stayed engaged very strongly, not only as Surgeon General, but with the Department of Defense and the Veterans Administration to help our wounded warriors. So it probably one of the most transformational things in my life that helped me to mature. But I also, I would say, reinforced the fact that war seldom solves the problem. You know, Teddy Roosevelt said, "You walk softly, you carry a big stick." Sometimes we lead with the stick, and it's not good. But, you know, we need to have a strong defense. I'm a strong proponent of that. But we have to make sure we use it judiciously. Because as we look back in history, whether it's Vietnam or others, it's questionable whether we should have been there or not. Yet, that's a political issue. The issue of our young men and women who go selflessly and serve their nation, it is fantastic that we are able to do that, and I praise them every single day.
So many of our contemporaries have never gotten over the Vietnam War, and they still suffer to this day with nightmares, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and on it goes. Did you, coming back from Vietnam, or perhaps even when you were in Vietnam, did you suffer any of those things?
I think all of us who go to combat and see the most, horrific atrocities,
horrible.
You come back a changed person. I know when I was with my battle buddies, not only in combat, but in other deployments I had around the world, you know, that's my family. We kind of supported each other. I remember when I came home after that first combat tour.
What year was that?
That was end of 1970.
Okay.
And I felt very isolated.
Okay.
If I wasn't with some of my battle buddies and I was with, quote, civilians in the real world, as we called it, it was like, well, they don't really understand. And it was an odd feeling. And it takes a while to reassimilate into society. I was fortunate. I mean, I remember struggling, but I made it. I went to school. I worked. You know, I was in the went from active to reserves, military. But some of my colleagues didn't make it. I mean, if you go to VA hospitals today, there are still people that are patients in the VA who are still suffering the mental health consequences of the Vietnam War. Okay, and now we've laid upon that other war since that. Okay, up right up to where we are now with Afghanistan and Iraq. So it's a tremendous problem. In the past, we talked about battle fatigue and shell shock. Those were gross macro descriptions of complex psychological disease. Today, we have an understanding. We can look at a brain and see what's going on as it relates to some of these mental health problems. So at least we have a better understanding, and we're making progress in intervening, mitigating these post-traumatic problems that our very brave young men and women suffer from after being in combat.
Let's continue this discussion at another time, Dr. Carmona. There's so much more that I want to get into concerning veterans' issues with you. Dr. Richard Carmona has been our guest here on the Buckmaster Show. Always a pleasure to have him in studio, and we will see you down the road, Dr. Carmona.
Thanks so much. Happy to be with you.
Thank you very much. Let's take the break right here. We've got CBS Network News for a news break, then we're back on Buckmaster.
CBS News Special Report. A girl is dead following a shooting at Saugus High School in Southern California. Multiple others were wounded. Patrick Moody with Henry Mayo Hospital.
We've received four patients here. I'm sorry to say that one patient is deceased, a female. We have three male patients here. Two are in critical condition and one is in good condition.
The suspect, a 15-year-old student, was taken to a hospital with self-inflicted injuries. Parents rushed to the school.
Not hearing from your child, it's the most terrifying thing in the whole world. And just being able to hold him again, it was like the best thing.
KNX's Craig Figner says many students were prepared.
Their schools, you know, tell them where to go. There's an area of the school they call the core. And so if you're near the core, that's where you would go. If you're, you know, in a situation where you're threatened, where there's, you know, a shooting. And so they've trained for this. And so they all ran to the core.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Pam Coulter.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, a destination in itself, not just for everything green and all of your garden needs, but while you're there on their beautiful 13-acre site, check out Zocalo. Zocalo has all that wonderful merchandise, much of it hand-carved from Mexico, Latin America, Europe. There's some beautiful pottery there. Tour the five shops at Zocalo Village when you're over at Green Things getting ready for the holidays with the poinsettias. Thousands of them. They grow more, I think, than anywhere else probably. Certainly in the Southwest. So check it out, greenthingsaz.com, the website, or zocalovillage.com. We welcome now David Safir. David writes primarily about education at the section known as The Range at TucsonWeekly.com. It's always a pleasure to welcome David to the Buckmaster Show. David, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thank you.
Looking at these grades that have come out recently, the state evaluation, they put out the Arizona Department of Education, released this schedule of how the schools are doing. More schools generally across Tucson and the state received top marks than compared to last year. But there's more to the story, isn't there, David?
There always is. And before I do that, by the way, I have to say that I read about this before I did my own research in the Star, and the Star reporter for K-12 Ed, Danielle Kamara, and I hope I pronounced her name right, just does an excellent job there. And I usually find myself reading these stories and having to correct them, or they're making false equivalents and saying, why isn't TUSD as good as Foothills? She just didn't do that. She presented the facts clearly for each district, separated them out, talked a lot about TUSD, but it really gratifies me to know that I can go to the Star these days and really go to the bank on the K-12 reporting. And I know Danielle from the Weekly, she's a very careful researcher, and she's a heartfelt person who listens with her ears and her heart and really writes well and clearly. So it's a real addition to the coverage of education here in the city.
I second that. I think she's doing a great job. Yeah.
So getting back to what we have, based again on her reporting, more Pima County schools earned A's this year. Let me back up and say that the state gives each district and charter school in the state a grade that is anywhere from A through F, just like the grades that teachers give. And those are based on a bunch of criteria, and we'll be talking about the criteria later because it's important.
Did you say each charter as well?
Yes, charters all get grades as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the same thing. You can compare them. As a matter of fact, the charters in Pima County did somewhat better than the district schools, but that's an apples and orange comparison because it depends on who they're catering to.
Okay.
But more A's in Pima County, not a whole lot more, but more. Fewer D's and F's, which means that more people raised to the B and C range. TUSD has the same number of A schools. In other words, it hasn't gotten more in the top rank, but it has more B and C schools. And that's to the good. We like to see that. We like to see things moving upward rather than moving downward. Now, some schools moved up and some schools moved down, but the most stunning change is Ochoa Elementary, a K-5 school, or maybe preschool through five, I think. that had an F last year and it got a B.
Wow, that's a lot of real estate, David.
That's a lot of real estate. No,
wow.
Nobody does that.
No.
And Holiday Magnet School is also an elementary school, went from a D to a B. Also a lot of real estate.
Whoa.
And that's quite a jump.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all to the good. Now I'm going to throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in this, I'm afraid, Bill, because I am not a fan of high-stakes tests, and these grades are based entirely on high-stakes tests.
Oh.
High-stakes tests have not moved the needle in the country. You look at the national test scores, and things aren't better, and it's the equivalent of saying, well, our kids aren't very physically fit. Well, what are we going to do about it? Well, let's weigh them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's check their body mass index. Let's see how fast they can run the 100-yard dash. Let's see how many pull-ups they can do. Okay, we've done that, but what are you going to do about it? Well, let's weigh them again, and let's take their body, and so on and so on. That's what the testing is. It's just going over and over, and the same kids are going to do well, and the same kids are going to do in the middle or poorly, and there'll be some change, but you don't get much out of that.
And they're teaching to the test, too.
That's a problem. It perverts, I think, the curriculum by making the curriculum go straight to the test.
Right.
But right now I want to talk about a peculiar thing that's happened with the state grades. And I'm looking at four schools in TUSD. I mentioned two of them. Ochoa went from an F to B. Holiday Magnet went from a D to a B. Two other elementary schools, Sam Hughes Elementary, which is very close to U of A and has a fairly well-off student body, it usually gets A's. This time it got a B. It went down one notch, which, you know, that's variation over a year. Likewise, Gale Elementary went from an A to a B. So now we're talking about four B schools.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most people think, okay, four B schools, they've got to be some kind of an equivalence between them. They've got to be similar. But let's look at the passing rates of the kids in the schools. And this is kind of astounding. Ochoa, 20% of the kids, 22% passed language arts, 30% passed math. So it was around a quarter of the kids who got passing grades. While at Sam Hughes, also a B school, 75% passed language arts, 65% passed math. In other words, these schools are not comparable in terms of the achievement of the students, which isn't surprising because Sam Hughes draws from a fairly affluent community with well-educated parents, and Ochoa draws from a less affluent community with probably lower education parents. And just like all over the world, the scores are reflective of the kind of background that the kids have. This is always true.
The grades are telling the public less than they used to.
They do. And the irony here is that they're doing what I had pushed for, what I thought was right. They used to make it kind of almost straight. You get high scores, you get high grades. You get low scores, you get low grades. But now they've figured in more than ever before student growth. So if the students, and even individual students, they track it down to the individual student, if students are progressing in terms of their scores, that boosts your grade way up. If they're not progressing, that brings it down. And that's fairer. So what happened at Ochoa? My gosh, it went from language arts last year, 14% passing to 22% passing. Bill, that's a huge raise. Math, 17 to 30%. That's great. Sam Hughes stayed exactly the same in language arts at 75, but it slipped in math. So it slipped from 73% to 65%. And I know it's hard to say numbers over the radio, but basically, there was one slippage of about 8 points at Sam Hughes. So because of that, because they didn't progress and they slipped a little bit in terms of their numbers, they went from an A to a B, which is perfectly acceptable. But what it does is it reduces the school grades to an absurdity. They don't tell anybody anything unless you know all the convoluted ways that they put together these grades. And I was looking through a 25-page description of this on the State Department of Education website. And I'll tell you, Bill, the statistics were so far above my pay grade, I couldn't even get near them. It's very sophisticated. But what happens is they don't do anything for the public. And so these grades and the high-stakes test are all anywhere from not doing very good in terms of explaining things to the parents and to the community to actually being harmful, I believe, to the students who have not progressed nationally from the time that we started with these high-stake tests with No Child Left Behind in 2002.
And that's the direction we continue to move in, these high-stakes tests.
I am hopeful that we're moving less in that direction. And I think, if you listen to Democrats all the way up and down the line, they're a little bit less positive about these things, even than Barack Obama was, who was really strong on testing and strong on charter schools. And you listen to them now, they're no longer talking like that. People, when I say this, people sometimes remind me, which is true, that it was President Bush who pushed this, but Ted Kennedy, the Democratic senator from Massachusetts, was on board with it too, and a lot of Democrats were. Well, Democrats are beginning to see that this is not helping the students who was supposed to be geared towards helping. So we got ourselves a bit of a problem here.
When we continue with David Safier, our discussion about community schools as a way to raise students' academic performance and improve the quality of their communities. That's Buckmaster continuing after the break in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
A Citizens Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is preparing to develop the next RTA plan. That's why members want your input on a survey of draft guiding principles they prepared. The principles will help guide them as they develop the next 20-year plan, which would be funded by a voter-required extension of the RTA's half-cent excise or sales tax. To take the survey or sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. This portion of our program presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities. Many things to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness,
or just hanging out in historic Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Again, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now our discussion with David Safir, who writes primarily about education at TucsonWeekly.com in their section. It's right there on their homepage. If you go to TucsonWeekly.com, it's called The Range, Topics from A to Z. And our topic right now, David, is community schools. How would you explain the community school concept?
Well, the concept is that the school shouldn't be an isolated building where kids go for 6 or 8 hours a day, how long it is, and then go home and there's no connection with the rest of the community. That the school itself should be an intrinsic part of the community, both for the students and for their parents, and ideally for other community members as well, so it becomes interlinked.
Like a neighborhood center.
In a sense, yes, but not just kind of a drop-in place, but a place where social services are concentrated.
Gotcha.
There are all kinds of health services that are available to people that are kind of hard to access, social mm-hmm. services that are hard to access, all kinds of various places where people can be helped. A lot of parents really could benefit from GED training or even English second language classes. Now, if these are set up in a school, and I know TUSD has lots of schools that have empty classrooms, they're not full to overflowing. If you can set those up in the school, first of all, your kids are better taken care of. Second of all, the parents feel that it's a place that they are not only welcome, but a place where they can actually benefit. And by doing both of those things, you create a bond between the parents and the school. The kids come in with a more positive attitude about the school, and the parents understand it, have a chance probably to meet the teachers and the administration and all kinds of people. And that by itself benefits the entire community and is a bit of a push, a bit of an incentive for the students. But it really goes beyond that. You know, when we look at our schools and talk about them being failing schools and how they're not doing well, actually our schools with upper-income families are doing quite well compared to world scores. They're very comparable in some places, you know, like the state of Massachusetts. The whole state is comparable to Sweden or Norway in terms of the international test. We're doing a fairly good job, but where we're losing people, where we're not doing as good a job as we could, is with the kids who come from poverty or low income. And one of the reasons is that these kids walk into the school with so much baggage. They're smart kids, they're alert kids, they're curious kids, but they have so much baggage, it's just difficult. It's just difficult to pay attention to the teacher. And an example is, if I've got a toothache on a given day, I'm not all there, mm-hmm. no matter what happens.
Right.
If I don't think I can make rent, or if I have another problem with my family, or a family member is involved with the law and somebody says, pay attention to me. Come on, pay attention to what mm-hmm. I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I know it's not what you're thinking. I just can't think about this.
So you're saying these schools perhaps could lessen the trauma and stress on the kids.
Exactly. And I know you were talking to Dr. Carmona mm-hmm. about PTSD, and everybody understands that now. They didn't used to, but now people do, about the kinds of stressors that go on in a war situation, which create kind of a permanent trauma that you may be able to overcome, but you never, it never leaves you. Well, these kids, if they come into school from certain communities and with certain economic situations, family situations, health problems, these kids are coming in with a constant level of stress, and often with something that's even more permanent with trauma in their background. And what they're doing more and more is thinking about trauma-based care for the students and trauma-based curriculum. Okay. Instead of saying, this kid is misbehaving, what's the matter with that kid? We need to expel him, or we need to do something, some kind of corrective discipline. Think, why are so many kids acting out? Why are so many kids not paying attention? What can we do to address that? And one way you address that is by acknowledging it. And schools often have things that are going on in the school that try to work to lessen students' individual stress. But the other is, and this is the community school idea, You give students some of the services that are lacking out in the world. You give them free breakfast and you give them free lunch. And for God's sake, you have a food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
The food pantry where parents can go in and get jars of certain foods or cans, mm-hmm. where they can get bread, where they can make sure that the family has enough to eat at home. Some schools have washing machines and washers and dryers. Oh. And these kids, some kids are so embarrassed to come to school in the dirty
clothes
that they have.
The dirty clothes that they've got, right?
But if they come in early, or even the parents come in early, they can wash these things. They can come out with clean clothes. They can look more presentable, feel better. Parents can bond around the communal washing machine and dryer. In every sense, we're building community and making it easier for kids to deal with their personal situation.
Now, do we have any of these community schools locally?
Well, you know, I was looking this up, and I knew that we had something, but it turns out that in 2015, we began the Tucson Community Schools Initiative, not just for TUSD, but a number of schools around the area. Mayor Jonathan Rothschild was fundamental in building that and supports it greatly. We got a couple of $1 million, I think, in grants from outside. But I looked at what they're doing, and while it's just wonderful, the things they're doing, it's rudimentary in terms of what's necessary. There needs to be a larger push. And I think I look at the people who are going to be on the city council this year, and a number of them, first of all, have young kids, like our new mayor,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them have expressed interest in the community schools. This has got to be a joining together, a coalition of the schools and the city government and the county government and state services and who knows what, to bring all this together with the idea that the schools become a more warm, caring place that not only make people's lives better, but make kids more ready when the teacher says, okay, we're doing math now, to be able to think about math rather than their growling stomach or their toothache or whatever happens to be their problem.
And you'd think this would translate into better performance for the kids.
I'm going to go so far as to say I guarantee it. Now, it's not going to take kids from the level of very, very low scores, shoot them up to high scores and have them all going to Harvard, but it will make a significant difference, not only there, but I believe it has repercussions that will keep on echoing through their entire lives.
Are there any cities in the country that you know of that have really gone all in on this?
Well, there's one. I'm not going to talk about a city, but I'm going to talk about somebody who everybody knows, LeBron James, the superstar who's also a superhuman being.
Right.
He grew up in Akron, Ohio, and he started something called the I Promise School, part of the Akron Public School District, where he has infused some of his money on top of the money it gets from the city and brought in all the things I'm talking about. All the kids are at the bottom level academically and tend to be some of the problem kids from elsewhere. And so far, the results of the kids have been really, really promising. And with the families around there, they've really developed a community. I am just hoping that this thing works out as well as it seems to. And it's just a kind of a shining example because of LeBron that we know about. But there are others around the country, and it's got to be a model that we adopt.
And that's in Akron, Ohio?
Akron, Ohio.
That's where,
right.
If anybody wants
to look that up, just look up I Promise School Akron or I Promise School LeBron, and you'll find there's a wonderful article in the New York Times about it a while back, and I've written a couple of posts about it as well.
All right, David Safir, we'll look for your work at TucsonWeekly.com in the section known as The Range. Thank you, David, and I hope you and your family have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. You too, Bill.
Thanks a lot. All right, coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk more about education. Our Friday Focus interview, Dustin Williams, the superintendent of schools here in Pima County. Did you like the appointment? One more thing, David, of Mr. Williams' appointment of Bruce Burke to the TUSD board.
I think he couldn't have done better putting someone in there with experience, is trusted in the community, and can hit the ground running rather than somebody who comes in and doesn't know what they're doing. It was a terrific appointment.
All right. On behalf of David Safir and Ray Allen, our engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Dave Ramsey's show is next. Have a great afternoon.